From Johannesburg to Jerusalem, the world is always changing, growing and innovating. Join Benji Shulman for the next hour as he brings you the trendsetters, the thought leaders and those creating news before it happens. Only on the New Blue Review, your favorite Jewish culture and current affairs show. Every Monday at 9 a.m. right here on 101.9 High FM.
You're listening to 101.9 High FM. I'm Benji Shulman, and this is the New Blue Review. Welcome to the show on this Monday morning. I've been out a little bit this month. I've been traveling, doing some work, so I haven't been on the show. So it's good to be back on what is likely to be the last show of this particular show of 2025. And that is going to be very much the theme for today. We're going to be looking at a few interesting issues bouncing on around the world, and also looking at some stuff for you to do, read, and see if you are hanging about here in Johannesburg or going down to the coast for family. That is, of course, assuming if the weather clears, because they keep claiming it's summer here in Johannesburg, and yet I haven't really seen the sun. So, yeah, that is a bit of a thing. So what are we going to be talking about? We're going to be talking about the civil war that has broken out on the online right in America. There was a TPUSA, I'll talk to you about what that is, conference over the weekend, and that has brought all of the stuff out, and everyone is having a big argument. So we're going to be seeing what that looks like. Then we're going to have some of the big stories Jewish-wise that we should be looking out for in South Africa in 2026. We're going to talk about a Russian half-bear, half-orange that has caused a bit of a kerfuffle in a Russian Duma Parliament tax committee. And we're going to be talking about places that you can go books that you can read and things you can watch and listen to over the festive season. So if you have some ideas about that, I'd love to hear. 061-895-1019. That's 061-895-1019. That is our WhatsApp line. And on the WhatsApp line, I would like to hear from you today on any of the stories that we're going to be talking about. But if you have a particular thing that you like to do on your holidays, place you like to go, maybe something you like to read or listen to, that is what I would like to hear from you about. But let's start off with a discussion about the online right in America and the problem of anti-Semitism and what might be happening there coming up pretty soon. So over the weekend, it was something called AmFest, which is America Festival, I think it means. And it's the festival that is hosted by something called Turning Point USA. And this was the organization that was founded and created by Charlie Kirk, who was assassinated earlier this year whilst organizing a debate on campus in Virginia, if I'm not mistaken. And since the death of Charlie Kirk, I think not many people had realized that he was kind of the glue that had held together a bunch of people who are involved in American politics very much online, on podcasts and Twitter and other sorts of places like that. And he was sort of the guiding thread of all these people, or at the very least, he sort of took up all the space inside that universe, so that he was very much the preeminent voice in some respects, in terms of not necessarily being the biggest, but kind of setting the tone for what was acceptable to say and not say in American politics, in this slither of right-wing podcasters and commentators. And you'll probably know the names if you've been on Twitter or follow any of this stuff at all. People like Ben Shapiro, Tucker Carlson, Candace Owens, Megyn Kelly, Miller, what's his name? There's one particular guy who have now, Steve Bannon, that's another one. So there's a bunch of these people out there. This is not even all of the list, but basically what seemed to have happened after Charlie Kirk died was that these people who had sort of been hovering in the discussion of the Republican Party had actually sort of there were some problematic views. There was Candace Owens was, if you know, Candace Owens has been going kind of completely mad for quite some time with anti-Semitism. Tucker Carlson had gotten thrown off Fox News and had started his own podcast. And so around these kind of few people, you had started to find anti-Jewish ideas being profited. There was increasing amounts of anti-Israel stuff happening. And very much, by the way, in a similar way, funny enough, that we've seen before, there was during in the run-up and during to the Second World War, there was a kind of very similar movement, unsurprisingly called the American First Movement back then as well. There was a guy, Father McCoughlin, who was a priest, and Charles Lindbergh, who famously was a big aviator in America. And these guys all had ties to the Nazis and were continuously arguing for a kind of neutrality during the Second World War. So there is this long history of people with big microphones and big media presences trying to sort of undermine American interests and drive a kind of isolationism in the country. And these sorts of ideas were translated into a thinker and politician guy called Pat Buchanan in the 90s, and he held a part of the Republican Party back in the day. And from time to time, you get these kind of explosions of what was called nativism in the Republican Party, isolationism, nativism meaning sort of anti, a kind of xenophobic type feeling, isolationism, which is America not being involved in the world, and of course protectionism, which we've also seen this idea of tariffing trade and goods. So these are all things that are a feature of a certain part of the right wing in America. And they've kind of been tapped into by these podcasters. And what happened after Charlie Kirk died was that suddenly there was this gap or a vacuum, and people started rushing in to try and fill it, I think. And in particular, what you had was a lot of conspiracy theories, first of all, about his death. Candace Owens in particular, who's probably got the biggest microphone on this. And have tried to make a big thing out of Charlie Kirk's death, and have got increasingly bizarre about it. We actually have Abigail, who sent me a message here saying, "Hi Benji, both Candace Owens and Tucker Carlson have lost it and are making millions in the process." Abigail, yes, I agree. I think that is exactly what's going on here, because every single time that they tweet something insane or more insane than they had tweeted before, they actually get a bunch of likes and comments and pushback and whatever, and that then creates more money for them and more subscribers and potential to advertise and all of these things. So after Kirk died, there's been this kind of rush to fill the space that Charlie Kirk held and to sort of redefine his legacy. So there's been a big attempt to try and say that he wasn't pro-Israel, that he actually didn't like Jews, etc., etc. And this had sort of all came to a head in this TPSA conference, because this was the first conference which had been produced since his death. His wife, Erica Kirk, had taken over, and now she was producing the conference. And she, ahead of it, actually came out and spoke about how people like Candace Owens had been abusing her and her family and the staff at TPUSA and causing death threats and all sorts of things. And so this was the first TPUSA conference, and there was a kind of an outbreak of argument on that side of the aisle. And we're going to go into that just after this. I'm Benji Shulman. This is 101.9 Chai FM.
This is the New Blue Review with Benji Shulman.
101.9 Chai FM. I'm Benji Shulman. And just before the break, we were talking about Turning Point, TPUSA, and their big conference that they just had this year. And by the way, if you have a engagement here, something you want to talk to us about, 061-895-1019, 061-895-1019, and we will take your WhatsApp. And basically, so now we have this conference that's coming up. Erica Kirk had already come out excluded certain people like Candace Owens, who had been particularly vicious after her husband's death. And now they were running Turning Point USA. And basically, what happened was is that they put a bunch of people upstage. So they actually invited a hostage, actually, from October 7th to come and speak. They had a rabbi or two. They had Tucker Carlson. They had Ben Shapiro. And a bunch of others, really, that have been part of this debate. And they basically climbed into one another. They also had J.D. Vance, who's the vice president. And there was the whole of my Twitter feed. I don't know if I maybe just have a strange Twitter feed, but basically the whole weekend, my Twitter feed was filled with people posting clips from Turning Point and different ideas and perspectives. And Ben Shapiro, who sort of was the original MAGA Jew, if you like, one of them anyway, who was reasonably certainly on the right and sort of anti-Trump or skeptical of Trump for a long time and then became pro-Trump. He really came out and said, look, you know, you can debate things, you can have ideas, but you mustn't engage in conspiracy theories and outright lies because it's not, you shouldn't be part of the conservative movement, basically. And then that was the sort of opening salvo. And since then, you've had Steve Bannon, you've had come out against him, you had Tucker Carlson have an argument with him, you have all of these guys. Megyn Kelly was another one. And there was a full-on war inside the Republican, not really inside the Republican Party, but in this sort of influencer set inside the sort of conservative movement. And it's kind of interesting to see where all of this will go, because not everyone really follows all of this stuff. This is very much the sort of voice on the right, but it's not it's not the kind of average American voter. It's all these people who are online, but they do drive the discourse. And all of this is important because the truth is that 2026 might be, I don't know yet, but it might be the year in which we hit peak Trump, right? Where Donald Trump gets to a point where he no longer has power to do things in the United States. Partly the reason for this is because there's a midterm election coming up. And if there's a midterm election that comes up where the Republican majority in Congress, which is very thin, very, very small, is frittered away, then it will mean that Donald Trump will not have the ability to pass certain kinds of legislation. If he loses control of Congress, there's potential for the Democrats to start impeachment process all over again. And basically, the Americans could just be in a mess for 2 years until the next election. So that's one thing. So you've got peak Trump. Trump may not be as powerful as he was in the last 10 years that we've come to sort of know of him. And so the next big question is, what is going to be in terms of the conservative movement and the Republican Party? Because in the last while, you've had full-on white nationalists, people who are basically good old-fashioned, effectively Klan members. That's their philosophical background, who have been given a platform by people like Tucker Carlson. And it's setting up because there's a question about which way is the conservative movement going to go. No one really knows. J.D. Vance is a vice president, but it's not clear that he is exactly the person that is going to be elected from the Republican camp. And the same thing goes for the Democrats, who also no one really knows who's going to be the champion who's going to run in that race. And I think that a bunch of different candidates with a variety of different views will obviously run in the next election in 2028, and they're going to start positioning themselves. We have the extreme left, and now we've got an extreme right, and they're sort of on both parties centrists in the middle who don't tend to vote for either of those. The question is, will there be a candidate that can really start to capture the attention of those groups? That's really the that's really the question, and it's going to be very interesting and potentially quite unnerving and anxious making to see where that goes, because obviously America is very important in the world, and if it sort of sneezes, the rest of the world catches a cold. And we're going to have to see what happens, especially also with its foreign policy and Israel, as well as its other foreign policy in places like Europe, etc. So that is what's going on. And looking at the arguments that were happening here in on the right is a question about where is the movement going to go? Because as I said, there has been this kind of explosion every once in a while from time to time that sort of explodes on the right of America. And the question is this going to be ascendant? The one thing I will say is that this argument was basically lost on the left about 10 years ago. There is no pushback inside so-called progressive circles in American left anymore, and it's become a consensus position, whereas on the right, the stuff is at least getting some kind of pushback. So the question is, will the sort of antibodies that have been released here be enough to push back against the disease? Because there is some proper anti-Semitism coming, and it's the kind that our grandparents would have been able to understand very, very closely. So, yeah, that is what's going on in the right wing of America, and it's going to be interesting to see where it goes here on 101.9 Chai FM. Now, turning our attention from America to South Africa, I wanted to have a look at some of the big news stories that may look to dominate South Africa from an Israel and Jewish perspective in the next year. And the truth is, there's potentially some good news on the horizon there that we can take advantage of, although one should expect there to be choppy waters as well. Also, as they say, one should never, one should be careful about making predictions, especially about the future. And on top of that, doubly so for anything South African, and definitely a lot when it comes to the Middle East. So you never know, you know, another war or another something else that happens with the coalition could change everything. But there are some factors that are going to shape the news when it comes to Jews, Israel, and South Africa next year. And those are the following. The first one is going to be the question of the ICJ, the International Court of Justice. That thing is going to get back on its wheels in early January, or early 2026. I don't know if it actually will be January. But basically, Israel has to submit what's called a memorial, which is its sort of evidence leader list, to the International Court of Justice. And there's going to be some, I don't know if there's going to be more oral arguments or more general arguments, but that's going to be a feature of the discussion as the South African lawyers get back into things and Israeli lawyers get back into things. I don't know how much of it will be televised potentially like we saw previously, or if we're just going to see written arguments, but the fact that the ICJ is going to be continuing is going to be something that we're going to see more of. So that will be one element. The other element is going to be the process of the Americans. So they appointed in the last week Brent Bozell is going to be the new ambassador. He's made it very clear that he's coming to South Africa to oppose South Africa's policy on America. That includes farm murders, includes BEE. It includes the ICJ in particular. And this is a guy who is old school American Republican, and he's not looking to mess around yet. So I would expect his voice to be sort of larger and important in the next while in South Africa. And as I said, Trump might be weaker coming up in the election in 2026, but South Africa is now a consensus issue, in Washington that it's problematic. Remember that it's stuff started, some of the stuff we saw has been ever since even the Biden administration, we started seeing some of the stuff. So South Africa's misbehavior on the world stage is something which Americans now know about. Doesn't matter whether you're Democrat or Republican. And so that is going to be a feature as our government tries to deal with continued American hostility. Israel stuff is going to take place with it as well. So that is a that is something else which is likely to take a precedence. The next thing, which is going to be big because we saw this last time around, although it's likely to not be as big a deal, is the fact that we have an election coming up. And that election will probably be, they're talking about November next year, and that's a local government election. So far, the polls are not looking good for the ANC, but we are a year out, so you never know. And whenever you have elections, people look for divisive issues that they can try and drum up votes. I would expect to see, like we saw in the last election, a certain amount of kind of pro-Palestine, whatever, coming into the local election priorities and creating that kind of a discussion. So expect to see a little bit of that getting into it. It is local government, so it's not as big a deal as it is with national government. But it could make a big difference because people like Helen Zille, for example, are running for to be mayor of Johannesburg. And an administration like that, a change in administration in Tshwane, in Pretoria, in Johannesburg, could make all the difference. Celia Brink is one of the most pro-Israel members of the DA, and he's running in Tshwane. And when he was mayor, there was a lot of work that went into trying to find ways to engage that administration to help bring in Israeli technology and all sorts of things. So we expect to see that that will continue. So the local government elections will also continue to bring this to the fore. On the good news front, which I think is quite positive, one of the things that we're starting to see and we will potentially continue to see next year is the as the ANC kind of withdraws from the public square, so to speak, what you're finding is that South African politicians are kind of reverting to the mean and not taking such harsh pro-Palestinian action, even if they're saying the sort of incorrect things. So I'll give an example. There was a giant kerfuffle, as you all know, a couple months ago with these plane loads of Gazans that were coming into the country, and they were screaming and yelling from people like Imtiaz Suleiman to say these people are coming to the country, and they wanted the government to stop the planes. And the minister is a DA minister, Leon Schreiber, and he very dutifully parroted all of these talking points that people like Imtiaz Suleiman were proffering in the public sphere, and said he was going to do something about it. So what did he do about it? He took a very smart decision. He said all the right stuff, and then what did he do? He stopped the Palestinian visa exemption that had been put in place about 2 or 3 years ago, which basically allowed Palestinians to come visa-free to South Africa. This had never been the case before, but the ANC had been pushed and pushed and pushed to do it, and in the end, they acquiesced. And it's like objectively a stupid policy, right? You can be sympathetic to the Palestinians if you want, but you still have to admit that this is a society that's chocked to the brim full of various armed and terrorist groups, not just Hamas, Palestinian Islamic Jihad. There's these other armed groups like Lion's Den and whatnot. And these groups all basically were getting 90 days to come to South Africa for free to do whatever the hell they wanted. And so the ANC guys might have tried to actually stop planes or get involved, but basically what Schreiber did is he's just like, all right, well, we're just revoking this visa exemption, which I don't think the Palestinian groups were expecting. But because it's not an ANC minister, they actually do get power to do things a little bit differently. And actually, I'm not going to talk too much about it, but there's we're seeing this all over the place inside South Africa, where the ANC isn't running stuff, other parties are taking over and going in different directions. We saw it with Leila Khaled Drive, for example. There was this big push by the ANC to get Leila Khaled Drive renamed, or Sandton Drive rather, named after Leila Khaled, who's the Palestinian terrorist who killed 17 Christians and hijacked a number of planes. And there was a huge outcry. The Americans got involved. It was patently not within the due process. But what eventually killed the whole thing was that there just wasn't support in the ANC's coalition for this thing, and so it never got out the front door. And this is what we're seeing all over the place, is that as the ANC withdraws from public life, as it starts to collapse and fall away and die, its obsession with the Palestinians goes with it. And so people are starting to do things that aren't necessarily pro-Israel per se, but are at least actually pro-South African. And naming a street after Leila Khaled was not pro-South African. Having a visa policy which let Palestinians walk around the country willy-nilly was not pro-South African. And as we're getting non-ANC people who are prepared to choose South Africa over the Palestinians, you're finding that they are basically making these decisions and driving the sort of pro-Palestinian narrative out of the country. And that is something which I think we'll see more of next year, especially with the election. And by the way, the other side know this, which is why another thing that you need to watch is various legal approaches by Palestinian groups, lawyers, and there's this so-called apartheid bill which they've put forward, which are trying to circumvent these changes in public opinion that are coming for South African society by trying to legalize processes rather that would mean that people could be targeted for their Israel links or their Jewish links or whatever it is, and so they're trying to get around the fact that they're losing the war in the public sphere as the ANC disappears. And I think that is something else which we are going to have to watch out for in 2026. I'm Minji Shulman, and this is 101.9 High FM.
This is the New Blue Review with Benji Shulman.
101.9 High FM. Now, Dis-Chem Wellness Clinic for adults offers you convenient and professional healthcare to help manage health risks. Whether you're having regular wellness checks such as blood pressure or cholesterol, Dis-Chem Wellness Clinic offers you a broad range of health screening services, including female health screening with pap smears, family planning and pregnancy screening. Family planning and pregnancy screening. Fast, affordable, and with care, find your nearest Dis-Chem Wellness Clinic inside Dis-Chem Pharmacies. Better health starts here. I'm Benji Shulman, and this is 101.9 High FM, the New Blue Review, chatting to you on this Monday. Is it like the actual final Monday of the year? I'm not sure it is. I think we've got at least one more, but for the show, I'll be going away, so we may not get to talk again. So it's definitely the final Monday for this show. And it is what it is. It's been a hell of a year. Now, an unusual debate around Jewish identity and history came up in, of all places, the Russian Parliament's Tax Committee last month. And it's a fascinating story, so I thought I definitely have to bring it to you. And what is it about? Well, this is a story about Cheburushka. So my Russian is not great. I'm not going to lie to you, especially on a Monday morning. But I'm going to try and pronounce it again. Cheburushka. Cheburushka. Okay, so what is Cheburushka? Apparently Cheburushka is this like, it's like the Mickey Mouse of Russia. Okay? It's a half orange, half bear character. And there was a discussion in a hearing on financing domestic toy competition in the Duma, which is the Russian parliament. And in the Duma, on the Budget and Tax Committee, The head of this committee, Andrei Markov, said that Chibiruska is actually a Jew, and he first appeared in a crate of oranges. And he just brought this up in the committee, and a huge debate has now erupted about what is the origins of Chibiruska, this Russian Mickey Mouse character, because he has an interesting story. First of all, he arrives as a crate in a crate of oranges in Russia, and there's a big thing about how Israel used to send oranges to Israel. So it was like kind of a symbol of Israel. And then a lot of the people in the Duma were very upset about this. And they said, yeah, but they might have also gotten oranges from Spain or Morocco. And this became like a big like viral thing on the internet. Because Chibiruska, the story of Chibiruska is that he arrives in this crate of oranges. And he arrives in a zoo. And in the zoo, none of the animals want to be his friend, even though it's a zoo full of lots of other animals. And eventually, a crocodile sends out a message to say that he wants to be his friend. And then he goes and he becomes friends with the crocodile. And this is a kind of a story of people who are not accepted being accepted. There has been this debate. Because when it was then very quickly pointed out that the writer of Chibiruska was in fact a Russian Jew, Leonid Schwarzman, who was a Soviet Jew himself. He was called Israel Schwarzman, but that wasn't really allowed during that time of the Soviet Union, and eventually left as well. And is actually a picture of him as a hippopotamus or something in the cartoon, and people are saying that this was him trying to put his story into the story of Jews in the Soviet Union, but in a way that made sense for everybody else. And apparently he was in these crates of oranges, and they came to Russia. So a huge debate being ignited about the origins of Chibiruska and where he came from, and how maybe Soviet Jewry, although it was Soviet Jewry was oppressed really by the Soviet Union, how they nonetheless managed to make themselves known in different ways, which is a fascinating story. So, yeah, there's that. Now, let's talk about some things that you can do whilst you're on holiday. It is December. You might be at home with some kids and want to be doing things. So here's a few places, whether you're in Joburg, Cape Town, or Durban, that you should consider going to. So the first one on my list, if it's not raining, because this is a sort of not raining thing, is a place called Swayang. And Swayang is a crater in sort of just on the edge of Gauteng and Northwest Province. And it's an actual meteorite crater impact. And you can actually go and see it and see what it looks like. And it's literally, the area is flat, and then you get this like hill, and then it used to be that there was you could actually hike into the crater below. I'm not sure if you can still do that. I think there were some problems with like acid mine drainage flowing into the place, and that's a bit of an issue. But there is a whole museum there, and you can take the kids, and you can walk around the rim of a crater. So if you've ever wanted to see an actual impact meteorite crater site, I would suggest you take the kids, go check out Swayang on the internet, and go have do that for the day. So Swayang is definitely number one on my list. Number two is fun for the whole family. Go and check out Jan Smuts's house in Irene. It is a... Jan Smuts is having a bit of a revival at the moment. A lot of books are being written about him. He was a very interesting guy who helped really create the foundations of South Africa as we know it today, and also helped to create the what was then the League of Nations, the preamble of the United Nations, was someone who was a supporter of the Balfour Declaration as well as the 1947 partition plan. So very important in Jewish history. And some of the correspondence around the Balfour Declaration might have even been written in his house in Irene. And he has a beautiful house. It's a museum. You can go do a tour there. They have a little lovely tea garden where you can have a drink and rolling lawns where you can have a picnic. And they have a great market there in Irene. So lots of fun for the whole family and a little bit of history where you can find out about an interesting guy who is having a bit of a moment in South African politics. As people learn and more about him, because he also sort of lost to the National Party during 1948 elections, and they brought in apartheid. And he had built some of that infrastructure himself as well. So it's an interesting legacy. So that is Jan Smuts. I have another three or four for you, so don't go away. After the break, I'm going to be telling you places to go in your holidays for 2026.
This is the New Blue Review with Benji Shulman.
101.9 Chai FM, tracking down a couple of things that you can do with your time during the end of the year. Now, if you're going down to Cape Town, there is another place which... before we get to Cape Town, sorry. We'll just finish up with Joburg Pretoria first. Do yourself a favor and go and see at the Pretoria University. They have an arts campus there, the Javit, and they have a gold exhibition, including the golden rhinoceros that was found in Makambukwe. So I think it was sometime in the 80s or something. There was an excavation done in a place which is just on the border of Zimbabwe, and they found this filigreed rhinoceros, gold-covered rhinoceros in a grave, and it kind of spoke to the civilization that had been there at one stage. And so they've placed this golden rhinoceros in a museum in Pretoria, and around it they've done a great exhibition of gold artifacts from all over the African continent. The Ashanti in West Africa, beads from East Africa, all sorts of things. And so if you're into gold and into golden artifacts, it's really a great place to go. So I would encourage you to do that. And then if you're heading down to Cape Town, two places. One makes my list every single year, so let's start with that, because I do think it is the one of the unsung heroes of South African tourism that you should go and see. And that is the West Coast Fossil Park. Now, the West Coast Fossil Park is about an hour and a half or something up to sort of the Lambert Bay area. And basically, this was a quarry in the 1900s. They were starting to excavate there, and they started blowing things up and suddenly found all these bones. And when they found all the bones, what they realized is that they were in the middle of some sort of fossil paradise thing. And there's a huge number of animal bones over there. And they were not really dinosaurs or even humans or pre-humans like we have up here in Gauteng, but rather sort of early mammals and big mammals. So you've got big kind of giraffes, zebras. They found a bear. The only bear that's ever been found south of the Sahara. And you can actually go on this excavation and look for bones yourself, and they'll show you bones that are in the ground. And it's really a fascinating dig that you can actually go and see. And if you have kids who are into this sort of thing, if they're into dinosaurs or dinosaur bones or whatever, it is absolutely a fantastic thing to do. So I would really suggest you go and try that out. And if you can't get there, go to the Natural History Museum in Cape Town, where a lot of these bones are now buried. If you want to support something local and lekker, the Jewish Museum in Cape Town is a place that I think had a few issues in the last few years between COVID and the war, and so it's always good to support them. And I would encourage you to go and support them, because there's also another element. It's not just the Jewish Museum, which has some great stuff in it about the history of the Jews, but they also have an exhibition of nutsuke, which is a kind of Japanese art form for clothing, which was developed in at a certain period. And one of the founders of the Jewish Museum had this collection of nutsuke. You might know nutsuke from a book called The Hair with the Amber Eyes, if you ever read that. It's all about a collection of nutsuke, and that was from Europe. So this is a South African collection. And so you can actually go see some Japanese culture whilst checking out Jewish culture as well. So I would do that. And then lastly, if you're in Durban and you want to go to a castle, you can go to something called the Kootmoot Castle. It's there in Durban, and it was built in a Scottish style, and they've got little zebras. It's in the middle of a reserve, and it's a really great place if you just want to go do something a little secretly in Durban and hang out on the lawns there and go and check out the castle. So in Durban, the Kootmoot Castle is something that I would suggest you do as well. And this brings us to the end of the show for today and this year, and actually forever, because as you might know, we have new management here at the station, and so there's going to be a big lineup change next year, and so this show will be moving, it'll be changing. I'm not going anywhere, so you haven't got rid of me just yet, but it will be back in a different kind of format next year, new and improved. So I'm looking forward to it. Have a great festive season, a good new year, and I'll see you back next year on the New Blue Review.